Hi dear listeners.
You're listening to Radio Revolt,
a show in which migrants and asylum seekers deal with a very complex topic of migration.
We are people with international history who come together to gain empowerment throughout doing community radio.
This is 92.6 Radio Helsinki.
Dear listeners, we are back in the studio again.
Dear listeners of Radio Helsinki, you're listening to Radio Revolt, and this January's edition is done by IPEC and me, Gea. Today we decided to invite for an interview Marina, coming from Ukraine, for quite some time already living in Graz. But we are wondering, how is it for her to be here, and how is it to look back and to look towards the situation in Ukraine? Particularly, we are going to talk about the war there. Marina, hi.
Hello.
As mentioned, you came to Austria, not now, but some time ago. What was your reason and why you decided to come right in Graz?
So I'm currently almost 5 years in Austria already, have been living only in Graz and before only in Ukraine. And the reason to come here was mainly to try out something new. I would like to explore new places, and Ukraine seemed quite small for me. And I wanted to meet other cultures, to see the Europe, what the European values are about. Austria was a very random choice due to some friend of mine helping me with the applications to the university. And it just happened that I got accepted in Austria, but I am happy in a way that I ended up here, but I don't think that this would be my last destination.
And how do you see the main differences between Ukraine and Austria now when you're here some time? Okay, maybe especially because of the situation in Ukraine now, but more general, the differences in nature, in cuisine, also general attitude and behavior of people.
I remember that I was quite shocked in the beginning, and the main thing is there is nothing wild here. In Ukraine, you have so many wild, unexplored places. You go in the mountains and you sometimes don't have any pass, and you just go through the forest somewhere because it's not marked. But here, wherever you go, you have marks. This signs with the Austrian flag, and you always have some hütte or some house or some wirt or some restaurant, and it's like everywhere. And I remember one thing as an example of the difference is when you go into the park or some natural area in Ukraine, you have things which are prohibited. So you just have don't do this, don't do this, and don't do this. And everything else is you're allowed to do it. And here, when I came in Vienna to the Danube Island, you have a sign with things which you are allowed to do. So you can do this, 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 and this, nothing else. And this was already like a mark for me that, okay, a lot of Ordnung here.
Like kids need to play on the playground.
Yes, yes. Not on the streets.
Mm-hmm. What about language-wise? Did you experience something so-called a language barrier or having a feeling of some disadvantages by not speaking German, and how is it now?
Yeah, since Austria was a very random place to end up, I didn't want to learn German and I didn't like this language in the beginning. Now I'm fließend in Deutsch. Because you have to know this language. Because if you go, for example, to the Amt and they keep talking with you in German and they ask you, why did you come here without speaking German and you speak only English? And of course, I felt really bad for this and for myself not being able to talk with him and to explain that I'm also human. Hey, like, I can live here without speaking the language. How many languages do you speak other than German? I speak four other languages. So, yes, there was such particular part with the bureaucratical people in Graz.
And the third field, the discrimination, is there something that you would say, hey, this is where I felt discriminated based on the fact that you're from Ukraine or based on the fact that you came to Austria?
I think when I came to Austria, I was really expecting this high standard, because in Ukraine you have the ideal of Europe. So the people always separate the rubbish. The people always are nice and everything is perfect here. And you have such freedom and transparency and democracy values. And I felt that me as a Ukrainian, it's more of a self-feeling of Minderwertigkeitsgefühl. So that I'm not good enough, because I was not raised in such perfect circumstances, to stand to the high standards of Europe. And I think with the time after living like a month here, I saw, okay, actually I'm separating the rubbish. I'm taking care of the ecology. And the locals, they just like, yeah, don't really care about these things. I'm trying to speak, to be honest with people, and my values are no difference in the values of people here. So it took me some time to understand that I am as valuable as a European.
So this was these were your adaptations to the local environment. But what would you say is something that you miss about Ukraine? What would be something that you would take with you? Would it be a belonging? Would it be a person? Would it be some habit that you would like to live more as Ukrainian here?
Of course, there are a lot of beautiful, lovely people. I think we are more open in a way from the very first moment, because I don't know, on the first night out, you start speaking about the meaning of life and like your inner personal deep feelings. And I felt that here it's a very thick barrier until you can get closer with the person. It's more of a small talk. And I really missed it in the beginning. And I think another thing would be the feeling of freedom, since there are not so many rules in Ukraine which you have to follow. But I think it was also partially due to my visa, because I felt, okay, I can lose my visa. I can be like just taken away. So I have to cross the street on the green light, like for sure. Maybe another thing which I would miss in Ukraine is artistic diversity, because Ukrainian people usually do not earn that much. And then you don't have that much consumeristic goods, but you find some other way to express yourself. So there are a lot of art projects which are going on just between the people from the downstairs, like Radio Helsinki as well, but in theater, in music, you have musicians playing on the streets, you have some street performances, you have this like open theaters, and I would love to have it more also here. Just cooperation between the people from unten. I think that Austria is a rich country, therefore it can provide more money to support the art. But we have a saying in Ukrainian that the artist has to be hungry, because if he's full, he's not gonna create the artistic, the real, that expression which he carries deep inside of himself. I mean, it's my personal opinion. I'm not offending any artist here. Ich glaube, das ist auch, dass die konsumeristische Güte dazu kommen, weil wenn du viel zu viel konsumierst, du glaubst nur an haben. Ich will das haben und das haben und das haben. In der Kunst geht es mehr um Sein, um irgendetwas zu erleben, um irgendetwas mitzuteilen. Wenn du Kunst zum Beispiel durch Haben betrachtest, das ist eine Idee von Erich Fromm, dann trennst du dich von deinem Kunstobjekt, dann bist du nicht mehr das, und das ist einfach Objekt von sich selbst.
To also remind our listeners, you're listening to Radio Revolt, and Ipek and Gea are sitting here with Marina together in the studio.
So, Marina, could you describe the Ukraine political development since it is independent?
It can be a very long lecture, but I would like to keep it short. So we became independent in 1991. I think since the beginning there was this tension of the political powers, because we had one person who wanted to become a president, Chernovol, and Kravchuk, who was more pro-Soviet, and Chernovol was more pro-Ukrainian. But he couldn't win because there was not enough of the awareness. It was just after the Soviet Union fell down. And then next time he wanted to be elected again, the Chernovol, during the next elections, but he was killed. So maybe he could have won and the Ukrainian politics could have turned somehow different. And then we had very vague time with different presidents, still trying to understand how we are different from the Soviet Union. The constitution was also partially taken from the Soviet Union constitution. And of course, if several generations live in that time, it's a very long process to come back to yourself. But in 2004, we had one revolution. I was 8 years old and my parents took me with them to sit on the shoulders because we had this Yanukovych, Yushchenko, again two presidents. And one, Yanukovych, won, but the people declared the elections frauded. So they went on the streets and they won. The revolution won, so we got the Yushchenko president, who then didn't show himself to be perfect or really good, but still better than the other one. And then Yanukovych won again, so this pro-Russian president, who is currently also in Russia, and he was also brought to Belarus together with some Russian powers. And then in 2013, we had another revolution where I already took part as a 17-year-old teenager, and it really formed me in a way as a person, because there was a signature which was supposed to bring us more to the Russian side, so make some union with Russia, which would be a direction towards the back to Soviet Union, and people really didn't want to have it. So we wanted to have pro-European values, we wanted to have visa-free regime, we wanted to be a part of Europe. So there was a call just on the Facebook, hey, let's go out on the streets. And I was there in the first night and it was like 40 people, mainly students, getting out because it didn't get that much resonance. And then after a week, the people kept staying a night over and a night over and a night over. It was already like pretty cold, but nevertheless. And then the students got beaten up. Some of my friends got beaten up by the police. And then the next day, thousands of people went out because it's unfair that the students are beaten by the police. And then this revolution like turned out to be violent revolution. The people got killed as well and yeah, got wounded. But this gives you the feeling that you can actually change something as a population. And it's a very good feeling. And I think it changed the way how Ukraine sees itself.
You said that Ukrainian people feel they said like pro-European. Do you think that Russia is not a part of Europe?
Okay, I would be more precise. As they want to be a part of European Union.
How did you perceive the beginning of the war? Is the reason for the war, in your opinion, only the personal interest of Putin, or are there multiple layers to this?
I think there are multiple layers to it. It's not particularly Putin's desire, but I would assume that without him, the war would never happen. It was definitely his choice to do it, but I think that people didn't oppose it. And the way they perceive Ukraine due to the such a long-standing propaganda rhetorics, which was going on and on and on, is still rather a Soviet Union part. I remember I was once opening Russian news, just tried to see what the other side is telling us during the war. And then on the state government, all the countries like Ukraine, Kazakhstan, they are listed ex-USSR. They are not even listed as a country. They just listed ex-USSR countries. So that this discourse of Soviet Union as a great lost empire will be kept through.
Okay, aber das ist interessant, weil eigentlich Sowjetunion unter dem Lenin hat sie haben entschieden, dass Ukraine, Kasachstan, Georgien und so separat sein sollen. Also Lenins Wunsch war das, dass Sowjetunion nicht andere Nationen unter dem Druck ein Part of, ein Teil von Sowjetunion sein sollen. Also aus diesem Sicht, oder wie siehst du, was bedeutet das? Weil eigentlich Sowjetunion wollte ja Ukraine befreien.
Ich meine, was Lenin wollte, ist eine Sache, was im Endeffekt passiert, ist eine andere Sache. Ich denke an die Sowjetische Union mehr als ein Reich, weil das war eine the main power, which was in Russia. So if you wanted to have a success, you would go to Moscow. The Russian was the official language. The Russian literature was developed very soon, starting from 1929. So when this first, after revolution times got down, when these freedoms and the expansion of the cultural differences, it all went down and the Stalin came. This is when it all turned back into the empire with very centralized power and the colonies, which just were providing things mainly, at least culturally.
Aber würdest du das auch für Lenin gleiche sagen? Oder war das eher so Stalin-Sache?
I didn't learn precisely in school this, so I don't have the direct information about it. But my idea is that those times were very turbulent times. So you have the October Revolution, then you have the First World War, then you have some new formations. And regarding Ukraine, I can say that we had a free Ukraine, at least part of the current Ukraine. It declared itself free until the Soviets came. So they sort of occupied us again and decided to make it a part of Soviet Union. And because at that moment there was no power, we just said yes. But I think that in other regard, with the Lenin's politics, the countries wouldn't agree to join the Soviet Union if they would be again a part of the Russian Empire as it was before. But I don't have enough knowledge to really talk about it deeply.
But except from the obvious devastation and cruelties, the change in the Ukraine since the war?
A lot. I mean, the amount of population in the country, going from the facts, the population circulation, of course, it's a lot of people from the east went to the west, and now we have the developing region in the West, but also the mood of people, I would say. The people became much more separated from Russia. And you hear Ukrainian language everywhere, only since the beginning of the war, like mainly, of course, not everywhere, but still. Also, there was the interest to the traditions, the interest to the history of Ukraine, the interest to who we actually are outside of the Soviet Union. Because before, the people were still trying to say, no, we're still friends, we're like brothers, like this classical rhetoric. And I was also in a way there. I went to Russia in 2014 after they attacked us, after they took Crimea away, and then they attacked the eastern part of Ukraine, together with separatists, of course, but with Russian backup. And I was trying to point out that the people in Russia are good, it's just the politics which are bad. But now I see so little resistance in there, so little everything, that I really don't believe that the people in there are that different from its politics. And another thing which changed in Ukraine a lot is the will to live, I would say, and the acceptance of your fate. Because people keep living, they keep going to work, they know that the rocket can hit them, but yeah, let's just go around it. And there was an explosion of stand-up comedy in Ukraine during the wartime. And it's just crazy to think that people like try to laugh and live their life and dance and have fun no matter what happens. And I think it's very beautiful.
What are the conditions of your family and close ones?
My biological father is currently fighting in the east of Ukraine. I don't have that much contact with him, but I see that he's alive because he goes online sometimes. My other family is in Kyiv, in the apartment. Their apartment was not hit. I'm knock on the wood. And they don't have electricity some hours a day, every day. Sometimes there are problems with internet. They still have the water and they still have the heating. Yeah, I mean, it's very hard. My father's business really went down because people don't have that much of consumeristic power. And currently living in Austria, I earn more than all of my family in Ukraine.
It's really sad. Do they prefer to continue fighting instead of having a compromise with agreement to Putin's demands? Are there people opposing Zelensky? And if yes, who are these and why do they?
They, you mean Ukrainian? Continue fighting or?
Actually, both of them. So I'm in the fake, weil einmal Zelensky gesagt hat, es gibt kein mehr Kompromiss. Das ist für uns eine Ehre, zu kämpfen. Natürlich Putins Offering, also Putins Vorschläge war auch nicht realistisch. Das ist auch ein Fakt. Aber genau, glaubst du, dass dieses Krieg, diese Fighting auf beide Seiten weitergehen wird? Oder glaubst du, dass von ukrainischen Menschen eine Protest geben wird gegen Zelensky oder in Russland vielleicht, gegen Putin, irgendwie wegen so politischer Kompromisse?
I think that at this moment, as we are now, there is only fighting possible and no compromises are possible. And I think that people of Ukraine, also due to the polls, would rather keep fighting, like 80%, I don't remember the exact percentage, but they agree to keep fighting rather than to agree to the demands which Putin possess, to rather than lose any territory as it is currently occupied. And I don't believe that there would be any protest against Zelensky. I mean, I am personally myself not the biggest fan of our current president. But in the beginning of the war, I think this was the one really good thing he did. He stayed and he gave the courage to people to stay and keep fighting. As a leader, it was the right action. Therefore, in the current situation, with his current actions, I would say that he is a legitimate president of the country with his wordings, as with his announcement. And I cannot say about the Russian side if they would like to keep fighting or no, but as a soldier, you can just say, no, I'm not gonna fight and go to jail. But it seems like people don't do it. They prefer to go to the front lines. And I don't believe in the protests in Russia. Throughout so many years, so many things happened in Russia and they could have protested since the beginning of Putin's regime, so when the democratic institutions went down, they didn't do anything at that moment. And now, after 20 years of this reign of one person living in all of this information bubble, and also there is a generation which knew nothing but Putin as a president, I don't really believe that they would protest, even if they realize they would not go out on the streets, they would not put their lives, they would not go to jail for their beliefs. At least this is not what we see now.
Es gibt aber zwei problematische sozusagen Orte in Ukraine, die gegen Ukraine sind, oder wie kann ich sagen, für Russland. Was sagst du dazu?
Donbass und Luhansk, das ist wirklich eine schwierige Frage und das ist wirklich meine Meinung. Ich bin keine politische Expertin und Analytikerin, aber ich würde sagen, dass die Situation da mehr um die wirtschaftliche Verbesserungen geht, nicht unbedingt um die kulturelle oder nationale Anhänge, weil das ist eine Region, eine industrielle Region, wo die Kohleminen sind. Deswegen die Leute wohnen da nicht so gut. Sie haben öfter ein hartes Leben, aber das ist auch ökonomisch sehr entwickelt. Also die Donetsk und Luhansk sind ziemlich reiche Städte wegen dieser Industriegebiete. Und früher, und sie sprechen am meisten Russisch, deswegen könnte ich behaupten, dass die vielleicht mehr mit Russland verbunden fühlen, weil sie auch an der Grenze ist und dorthin öfter reisen. Aber ob sie wirklich bewusst damals in 2013 für sich gewählt haben, also alle Leute, dass sie wirklich ein Teil von Russland sein wollen, bin ich mir nicht sicher. Also ein Teil davon sind sicher Extremisten, die wirklich dafür gekämpft haben. Aber ich kenne persönlich sehr viele Leute, die schon damals in 2013 weggeflohen sind, weil sie nicht ein Teil von Russland sein wollen oder weil sie keinen Krieg haben wollten. Also denen war ganz egal, zu welcher Stadt gehören, sondern keinen Krieg haben. Und ja, da ist immer mehrere Seiten dazu.
Warum glaubst du nicht, dass in 2013 die Menschen nicht selber bewusst entscheiden haben oder gewählt haben, mit Russland zu sein? Glaubst du, dass es eine Korruption oder so war? Oder?
Ja.
Do you think Zelensky would be ready to end the war by a political agreement? If yes, what do you think the agreement would be like?
We are ready. I am, as a Ukrainian, at least I would be ready to end it by the political agreement. And I think Zelensky would also accept it if we can back to our territories as they were before 2013. So currently the people, the Ukrainian population and the general mood is to bring also Crimea back, because it was annexed, in our opinion. And if it would be possible, with some guarantees that the Russia would not attack us again, or that the other countries would protect us if this happened, I think then it would be a possible political agreement. But I don't believe the truth Russia will agree to any of this.
So who's gonna win? Can there be ever be winners in the end of such a war? How do you see that this war will end?
Dear listeners, this was this Radio Revolt really edition on 25th of January.
In this regard. Of
you
course,
just
we all
heard in the first part an interview with Marina coming
no
from Ukraine and
us.
Living in Graz
we don't
for
believe
a few years
they will stop on their own. We don't believe that they will stop on their own.
And
but I think at
well
this moment it's just important to
in
Ukraine. Put your feet deep
and then
in the ground
the second
and
part
try to
of
do
today's Radio Revolt
you can
show,
do to
we present you an interview done
this is
with Ipek and Gia, hosting Diana and Angelos
really
coming from Russia and Greece, again on the experiences of moving to Graz for the academic reasons, and then openly talk about the war in Ukraine. Thanks for being with us today. At this point, we can already announce you the next show. It's gonna be on 8th of February. Going further with the topic of war in Ukraine, hosting an online interview with Olesya from Kiev. Dear listeners, you're listening to Radio Revolt. My name is Gea, and after an interview with Marina from Ukraine that you just heard, we are presenting you an interview done by Gea and Ipek with Diana from Russia and Angelos from Greece, talking about their experiences of moving from a homeland to Graz for the academic reasons, and opening the topic of war in Ukraine. Dear listeners of Radio Revolt, we came to the second part of our today's edition of the show. In pre-production studio of Radio Helsinki are now sitting me, Gea, and as well Ipek, Angelos and Diana. Hi and hello to everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
All of us from different countries, me coming from Slovenia, Ipek, you from Turkey,
yes.
Angelos from Greece and Diana from Russia, gathered here, chosen the language English to discuss why coming to Austria in the first place, how was it with our expectations, what do we miss in our homeland, and then focusing as well on the actual topics that we also opened in the first part of today's show. War in Ukraine and discussing perspectives and knowledge we are having about that. looking at you, Diana, asking you first, why deciding to come to Austria in the first place? How long ago? And why especially Austria and not somewhere else?
To be honest, my move into Austria was a bit spontaneous because I was going to visit Switzerland for continuing to my studying, but for this I needed a scholarship, which I didn't get due to the political stuff. But I always wanted to continue my higher education, which is PhD education currently, abroad. So my moving was caused only by working. And exactly in Austria, I found a PhD position, which was perfectly suitable for me. I came here 3 months ago in the November 2022.
Looking on the other side of the table towards Angelos, coming from Greece, since I know being here for a tiny bit longer than Diana. Yeah, tell us how long ago, why Austria and specifically particularly Graz?
It's a bit similar with what Diana said. I came here by coincidence. I was looking to do a PhD abroad. One of the positions that was here to make a group that will apply for a scholarship. I was chosen to be part of this group, and it took about a year until we applied for this scholarship and get it. So it was not obvious that we will be doing this. It was a bit insecure.
And in which field are you academically active currently in Graz? And would you consider some other destinations somewhere in some time or potentially going back? Or would you consider staying here?
The thing about doing something academically, at least as a career, you have to be very mobile. You have to move a lot, change countries, move 1 year here, 1 year somewhere else. So this is part of the job description. If someone wants to do it professionally, he has to be obliged to move between countries a lot. My field is, I'm coming from political sociology, mainly working in the field within social movements, contentious politics, civil society. I am based here in the Department of History, in the Institute of Historical Anthropology and History in the Southeast European Studies.
So, Diana, have you ever felt discriminated, especially due to reasons of racism, since you are here?
I'm happy to say that no, I've never faced it here, any type of racism. And what I did like mostly, I had no problems with apartment finding. It was really okay with bank accounts. It also was okay for me to open a bank account, which I heard could be a problem for people from Russia in Europe.
And from the point of view, when presenting yourself to people and if they ask you where you're from and telling that you're from Russia, did you ever, in a way, need to encounter in a conversation with this person about the war in Ukraine based on the fact that you're coming from Russia?
Just a few times. For me, mostly people are so careful with this topic. Usually they start to ask about this war stuff only after maybe a few days of getting you to each other.
All right, a tiny bit we explored the differences in different countries and cultures, talking about Russia, living in Austria, and how is it in Greece. And now coming to the second part, to the second point of the debate we would like to open among us. Maybe asking you, Diana, first, how do you and the people you're dealing with, for example, at your work, your friends, your family in general, see the political and economic situation in Russia at the moment or throughout some time till now?
I'd say it really depends on the time, like how our behavior evolves from the starting point of the war. In the beginning, I can say only from my side and maybe from the side of people I communicated with. It means nothing to say that we were all nervous. In the beginning, most of us didn't believe. When I say most of us, I mean most of my circle of communication, because there are a lot of people in Russia. So it's like you don't believe the first, then you just look what's going on. Then you became more nervous and nervous because a lot of information appears from different sources and you don't know what to believe. And of course, it was, and it is a really hard time because a lot of people from Russia have relatives in Ukraine and vice versa, and friends. So coming back to the question how we were dealing with this, honestly, somehow. Just some got depression, some got just panic, maybe panic attacks. And at some point, some advices from psychologists started to be spread among the people. The strongest of us, I'd say, just started to try to continue to live in the meaning, to continue to do usual stuff, to work, to just to do something, just to stay on the legs. Then some of people started to think how to leave Russia or how to continue to live in Russia. So it really depends. Also, it's hard to say for the whole country because there are a lot of regions and it's really hard to estimate which kind of influence it had for the all regions.
And focusing on the media coverage of anti-war protests in Russia, at the beginning there was almost none of it. But with the time, we could see more and more protests and rallies for peace against war in the streets of Moscow and some other cities as well. How representative is this what we as people from Western Europe see, read and hear about this? Do you maybe have, in a way, access to some other information than what is commonly spread in the media and served to us?
Unfortunately, I'm not the right person to ask about the news because at some point, due to the raised level of nervous and panic, also, one of the advice for people who are just up to read news. So the first point, I have no clear idea what did Western people see in the news. What can I say from my side? At least in big cities like Moscow and St. Petersburg and some others, there were demonstrations against the war. Really hard demonstrations, I'd say. I cannot say about like the number of people participating, but we saw this. So, of course, there are people who are against the war, definitely, and who are brave enough to share their protest and their manifestation in publicity.
And if you focus specifically on your family, friends, and the circle where you were living before in Russia, what has as well changed in the reality of these people since the beginning of the war? How does it impact their everyday life? You already mentioned some of the mental states and advices they were getting from outside. How do you see this general mood?
The point I'd like to highlight is that Russia is a really big country and it really differs from region to region, as well as mood, as well as usual behavior, daily routine. Again, from what I saw, is depressive and nervous. And of course, people don't know what to expect in the next 10 days. Some of people started to prepare to the worst cases, to crisis, to save money, to do something to give themselves at least some stability in their life. Some of the people decided that you cannot plan anything up to one day, and they got some mood like to live at least now and here and to spend all money, for example, because in some sense they can lost money. I mean, they can lost their precious tomorrow, for example. Also, what I could mention, I'd say there were a lot of family conflicts. Because what also I saw and heard, the mood regarding to the war depends on the generation.
it's a common case when young generation has an opposite point of view from the older generation. And there are cases when children, and by children I mean like kind of my generation, got serious conflicts with their parents and grandparents. So it also affects on the general mood of the society.
Yeah, it's repeating now inside me as well. Question now, when you mentioned generations and awareness, how is it for kids to understand what is going on? I don't know if you really have in your circle someone that is really young, how to tell them what is going on and why, for example, if they cannot understand the term war, they feel it, right? It's, as we mentioned, it's in the air, it's among the people.
It's an interesting question. Of course, it depends on age of children we are talking about. I'd say that in general, children up to 5 years, more or less out of this situation. Of course, probably they catch the general mood of their parents, but I don't think they could understand the reason. About school guys, I know one family where there are two children, exactly school years, and their parents, of course, really care about the situation, and they talk a lot about this at their home. And for children, you know, they just heard, wah, 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 but they, of course, don't understand exactly what it is. And unfortunately, the war just became usual topic for them. So they don't understand correctly. Maybe they get nervous sometimes because of their feeling, because they feel their parents. But I mean, at least now, after almost 1 year after the beginning, they're more or less okay with this. They just understand that something's going on.
Angelos, some different questions, because actually you are interested in politics, I know. And what do you think about Putin's politic? Do you think that his politic successful? Or I saw, for example, him like Erdogan.
You mean
like in charismatic leadership?
You mean in the long duration, in the 20 yeah. years that he's in power? I think he came in power somewhere around 2000, right? It's difficult. Okay, Putin kind of inherited a failed state completely. After Yeltsin, the country was very much in a distress. There was a huge unemployment in Russia. There was famine, and a lot of public-owned enterprises have been sold to big businessmen. So coming from his background as a KGB agent, he kind of brought back some of the fame of Russia, the fame of the Soviet Union, like building a robust state, taking some of the powers back and trying to form a modern state who would operate within capitalism and not socialism. I think there are pretty similarities with Erdogan, because in the beginning I think there were expectations from the West that they kind of would modernize the states and bring them closer to a multipolar world system where we could have some kind of world peace, like Fukuyama said. But I don't really know the process, because I was very small at that time, and during his time in power and the kind of desire to stay so long in power for both of them, it's really difficult. And especially in Putin's case, they had almost to change the system, because he kind of stepped down. He did 2 terms, Putin, and then Medvedev took over. And then after 1 term of Medvedev, Putin came back. So it was a trick to bypass that only the president can do 2 terms. But he returned after, and something similar happened also with Erdogan. I think he changed the system from a democratic to a more presidential. It's a question that comes not only for these 2 big countries, which is really big, but also for Hungary, for example, for Orban.
Yeah.
Because you have this kind of autarchic leader that wants to bring some parts of the glory of the old state. And I think one common characteristic of these leaders is that you have to suppress minorities. As I see it, the minorities now are like, for example, refugees, migrants, especially in European countries. I don't know about Russia or China. And in order to have these suppressed minorities, you can elevate an identity of a nation state, of a national identity that stands kind of above them.
Anything from your side, Diana, that you would feel like, hey, this is what I would like to say, but we didn't ask you?
I have a question about Diana. After the war started, a lot of Western companies have left the country, and for example, the most common ones are like Coca-Cola or McDonald's and so on, but also a lot of IT companies have left the country as well. So how these people that have lost their jobs have been affected through the war, how do they feel about it? I mean, we're talking about highly educated mostly people, but also not. They are not able to move now to another country to find so a job so easily. So they kind of sort of IT developers or so, they kind of are stuck there. They're not so easy to get a visa and move somewhere else. There is this whole of stratum of people. I'm referring mostly to the people that have a university education, but also there are the others that have not. How do they, these people kind of...
dealing with it.
Yeah, or living with it or kind of react on it.
About reacting, of course, it's negative reaction to this. I can say only about cases I know. For example, yeah, a lot of Western companies left Russia. But, for example, McDonald's. I don't know the details, but now we have analog of McDonald's, which is called, in Russian, it's «Вкусная точка». In English, it's like «Tasty and point». But generally, it's the same stuff, but under the other name. And so in case of McDonald's, like people were retired, but after month or 2 months, I don't remember correctly, the new place was opened. But it doesn't mean that all people got their jobs back, because if you don't take into account only companies who left Russia, there are also cases when Russian people worked for Western countries, for example, remote. There are cases when Russian people worked for Western countries remotely. A lot of them got retired. For them, I'm not sure they were able to get the same job back. And to be honest, I don't know how they deal with this. And about getting a new job abroad, of course, it's problematic to get a visa, but there are some countries that don't require visa for, like, let's say for 1 year or for 6 months or for some time to just try to find a job. Of course, it's really specific cases, and probably there are a lot of people who are still without work due to the situation.
Well, Diana, thank you so much for this insight, especially
Radio
about
Revolt
reality
edition
of people
on 25th
in
of January.
Going on
you
there.
Just heard
so
in the first
a
part an interview with Marina, coming from Ukraine and living in Graz
your
for a few years, about her moving experiences.
Thank you so much, and thank you for
and
the invitation.
As well, opening
and Angelos,
debate about
thanks as well for being
thank
with
you
us.
Both.
for being
for
with us.
For inviting me.
For helping
show.
Us exploring the territory with questions
with
and as well
and
yes.
Gia, hosting
us some insights
Diana
about your
and
life in
Angelos
Austria.
Coming from Russia and Greece, again on the experiences of moving to Graz for the academic reasons, and then openly talk about the war in Ukraine.